Support for this episode of the podcast comes from our patrons at Patreon. Go to patreon.com/chasingearhart to join the chase and become a patron today. On the morning of July 2nd, 1937, Amelia Earhart and her navigator Fred Noonan disappeared over the Pacific Ocean without a trace. 81 years later, all over the world lie scattered pieces of their puzzle, waiting to be put together. Welcome to Season 2 of the Chasing Earhart Podcast.
In the 1920s and 30s, America was in love with the airplane. In primitive airfields across the country, millions would watch daredevil pilots push the limits of what their machines could do. But the biggest attraction was the air race. On display was both thrilling competition and hair-raising danger. Given these odds and the stakes, many believed that women had no business flying, let alone racing the men. But a few women refused to listen. In Fly Girls, Keith O'Brien tells the amazing story of five women who were determined to beat the men at their own game. Their battles, their losses, and in the end, their impossible victory. It's an epic quest led by an unlikely band of renegades. A flashy Alabama housewife, a farmer's daughter from the northern plains, a descendant of Wall Street wealth, a mother of two, and a social worker from Boston who flew her way to global fame. Critics labeled them powder puff girls, ladybirds, and sweethearts of the air. But if they had to have a name, they were Fly Girls.
In 1926, there were countless ways to die in an airplane. Propeller blades snapped and broke, and planes went down. Wings failed, folding backward or tearing away completely. Control sticks got stuck, sending airships hurtling toward crowds or hangars. And all too often, engines just stopped in mid-flight, forcing pilots to scan the ground below for a farmer's field or a cow pasture, any place where they might land in a hurry. Quote, "In such a crisis, there is no time to think," said one early pilot. "You either automatically do the right thing, or you die." Tonight, on a special midweek release for the 54th episode of the Chasing Earhart podcast, and on the night of his book's release, author and project guest Keith O'Brien joins us via Zoom right before the kickoff of his tour to talk the lives and careers of aviation icons Ruth Elder, Ruth Nichols, Louise Thaden, Florence Klingensmith, and Amelia Earhart. Individually, these women have some of the most incredible aviation stories of all time. They are legends, icons, and heroes. But collectively, they are simply known as Fly Girls.
This is going to be a good one, folks. Joining me via Zoom is author Keith O'Brien. Keith has a book coming out on August 7th that has a lot of buzz around it. The book is called Fly Girls: How Five Daring Women Defied All Odds and Made Aviation History. And it's a celebration of some of the early women in aviation. There are five stars of the show in Fly Girls: Ruth Nichols, Louise Thaden, Ruth Elder, Florence Klingensmith, and of course, Amelia Earhart. The book is on Time Magazine's Best Books of Summer list, and it's a shoo-in to be, in our opinion, a New York Times bestseller. Keith, it's pretty hectic for you right now. Thank you for taking the time, and welcome to Chasing Earhart, sir.
Thanks for having me, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, before we dive into the book here, I'd like to do a little housekeeping and get that out of the way. Can you tell everyone a little bit about your education and your professional background, please?
Sure, absolutely. So I've been a working journalist for about two decades now. I've worked at my last full-time staff position was at the Boston Globe. And in the past several years, I've been doing a lot of writing for New York Times, Politico, do a lot of work for National Public Radio. I've written a few books, and this is my third.
Okay, so let's get into it here. Now, the book is, I think, very important because it not only highlights Amelia Earhart, but it also highlights in detail the lives and careers of, as I said, Ruth Nichols, Louise Thaden, Ruth Elder, and, of course, Florence Clement Smith. Now, we're going to do this interview a little bit backwards compared to the way we do other ones because I think the content calls for it. We'll definitely get to Amelia, but let's introduce to the world the other four stars of the show. Now, we'll start with Ruth Nichols. She has an interesting history as it ties to Amelia Earhart. Can you give everybody an overview about Ruth?
Sure. So one thing before I go into Ruth, you know, just to give your listeners an idea, you know, this book, as you know, Chris, is a narrative. I was seeking to tell one specific story, one specific narrative about women in aviation in the 1920s and 30s, women fighting for the right to fly and race airplanes. So, you know, I wasn't setting out to do a boilerplate history where each chapter has its own character. I was seeking to tell a story where I'm weaving together the lives of these people as they lived them. And so to your question, you know, Ruth Nichols, she has been by and large forgotten outside of aviation circles and specifically female aviation circles. Ruth Nichols is a forgotten American icon. But in the time in which Ruth lived, in the late 1920s, early 1930s, Ruth was one of the bravest, boldest American women of them all, and briefly challenged Amelia Earhart for the title of most accomplished female aviator in this country. In 1931, in fact, Ruth Nichols absolutely eclipsed Amelia as a pilot. She set the altitude record that year. She set a speed record that year. And then, you know, one full year before Amelia Earhart would attempt to fly solo across the Atlantic in 1932, Ruth Nichols would try it in 1931. And, you know, were it not for a little bit of bad luck and a little bit of poor planning and really just the sort of happenstance disasters that would happen on these flights during this time period, Ruth Nichols may have made it across the ocean first in 1931. And if she had, it'd be very interesting to see how history made it play out differently.
Absolutely. A legend in her own right, for sure. Now, from one Ruth to another, this next woman has one of my favorite lines spoken maybe ever when you look at the context of the line that she says, and I'll quote it. "I want to do something that will make people notice me." Hold on to your hats, folks. Keith, please tell everyone about Ruth Elder.
So 9 months before most Americans had ever heard the name Amelia Earhart, Ruth Elder, a flashy Alabama housewife, set out to become the first woman to fly across the ocean. This is August 1927. We are 3 months removed from Charles Lindbergh successfully flying across the Atlantic. He has become a global star, earning both riches and fame. And everyone now realizes, both men and women, now realize that the next historic flight will be getting a woman across, or a woman getting herself across. Ruth Elder is determined to be that woman. She's in her mid-20s. She's on her second marriage, and she's working as a receptionist at a dentist's office in Lakeland, Florida. It is not the life that Ruth Elder imagined for herself. She's an attractive woman, and she's got style. You know, she wore her hair short how she wanted to, in a way that was very different for the time. You know, she wore pants and ties, men's ties. And she would wear a ribbon in her hair that was multicolored. It was a rainbow-hued ribbon that, once she arrived in New York declaring her intentions to fly across the ocean, little girls in New York would emulate and begin to want to wear a Ruth ribbon. You know, Ruth Elder sets off, you know, in the early fall of 1927 to try to get across the ocean with a male co-pilot. I don't think I'm revealing any great secrets to say that obviously she does not make it. If she did, you know, we may not know the name Amelia Earhart at all. You know, she fails, and in that failure, Ruth Elder pays an awful price. She faces a lot of criticism that men I should point out, never faced when they failed. So that was hard for Ruth Elder to face that criticism, but she did prove something, not just to other women, but to wealthy men who were also watching. Everyone now knew that if you could get a woman across the ocean, if you had a bold woman with a capable plane, you could really make some headlines. And it did open the door for Amelia Earhart 9 months later.
Absolutely. Well stated. Now, speaking of Amelia Earhart, she wasn't the only aviatrix that hailed from the state of Kansas. Louise Thaden was an incredible woman in her own right. Can you introduce our audience to Louise?
Sure. Exact same time window. You know, Louise Thaden is born in Arkansas in 1905. She's several years younger than Amelia and a few years younger than Ruth Nichols. And, you know, her father's a traveling salesman and ultimately lands in Wichita, Kansas, where he's selling mentholatum products, you know, healing rubs. You know, Louise gets a job. She attends college for a while and she gets a job selling coal, of all things, selling coal in Wichita, Kansas. It probably wouldn't surprise you to know that she wasn't totally pleased with that job or that lot in life. And, you know, like all of these women, Louise had a daring streak to her. She, from a young age, wanted to do things her own way. She wanted to work on the car engine with her father. She liked to jump out of the second story of their barn in Arkansas just to see what that felt like. You know, she didn't like to wear the white frilly dresses that her mother purchased for her. She wanted to get dirty and wear overalls with the boys. She was different. She wanted her own path. And in Wichita in 1926-27, that path was laid out before you. Walter Beach, one of the great early aviators and plane builders, was building his early planes, his travel airplanes, just a couple miles from her office selling coal. And they had a direct connection. The man who owned her coal company was an investor in Walter Beach's Travel Air. So one day, Louise, you know, just couldn't stand selling coal anymore. And she made her way to the airfield east of town in the grass on the prairie there where Walter Beach would test and build his travel airplanes. And she's there, this lone woman amid all these grease-stained mechanics and pilots. And who does she run into but her boss at the coal company? She believes she's going to be fired. You know, she's shirking her work, clearly. The opposite happens. And the next day she gets a call from Walter Beach, who offers her the job of a lifetime. Is she willing to go to the West Coast, go to California, and be part of his travel air distributorship out there? You know, Walter Beach wasn't offering this out of charity, and he wasn't offering this because he was a feminist. He was offering it because it was good business. He was using Louise for business. If you could put a woman in 1927, especially a tall, distinctive-looking woman like Louise in an airplane, well, you were going to win some headlines, win some attention from the newspapers. It was a business decision. He sends Louise west, but she uses it to her advantage. She learns how to fly and is soon racing and striving to race the men.
She was incredible. Her story is always touched me personally. She was a rock star, and it's just like all these women, but Louise was just really special, I think.
Well, and I agree with that, Chris. And I would say, you know, one reason why I believe that is she was one of the very few women in this time period who not only flew planes, not only raced planes, but had a family, had children. She was a mother. You know, her first child is born in 1930. Her second is born in 1933. You know, she is much like many modern parents today. You know, she was trying to have it all in a time when that just wasn't permitted by American society for a young woman. You know, Louise was juggling her marriage, juggling her children, and juggling her own personal ambitions, and at times making sacrificing her career, you know, for her family, which I think is something that I certainly understand as a working parent, as a father who's made sacrifices myself, you know, so that I can spend more time with my kids. And I think a lot of working parents would understand that too. A lot of working parents will appreciate the story of Louise Thaden.
And that's why it's so important that it's told. And we're so grateful that you're telling it. Now, Miss Florence, another one that I love this woman. It's the opinion of a lot of people that Florence wasn't only the most talented flyer of this particular group, but maybe one of the greatest aviators ever. She's also responsible for what many consider to be the biggest upset of all time. And can you tell everybody about Florence and tell everyone about said upset?
So Florence Klingensmith was a daring pilot from the Northern Plains. She was born and raised in a tiny little farming community across the Red River from Fargo, North Dakota, on the plains of Minnesota. Like Louise, like Amelia, like Ruth Nichols and Ruth Elder, you know, Florence had a daring streak to her. You know, she was different from a young age. She wanted to ride motorcycles. As soon as she had a chance, she was riding motorcycles. Around town in Moorhead, Minnesota, she was known to ride the little streetcar, not in the seats like everybody else, but clinging to the cow catcher up front. She turned heads in the tiny little town of Moorhead and later Fargo. But what she really wanted was to fly. You're right, Chris. She was undoubtedly, you know, among this group, probably the most skilled pilot, just speaking about strict skills. Because, you know, Florence didn't make a lot of long distance flights like Amelia did. Or Louise, or Ruth Nichols. What Florence did was race in the what was known as the free-for-all races, which was whipping your plane around pylons, 50-foot towers, essentially, placed on the ground in a triangular course. And, you know, that was an extremely hard thing to do, just speaking strictly from a technical skill point, you know, to whip your plane around pylons, 70 feet off the ground, going 200 miles an hour, required both of your hands, one working the throttle, one working the stick, both of your feet working both rudders of the plane. It required the utmost coordination and experience to be able to do that. Most men could not do these kind of flights. And, you know, Amelia herself, you know, admitted that she wasn't up for that. That was not her gig. This was something Florence knew how to do and really excelled at doing. And so, in 1933, the male air race officials would give her an opportunity to not only race in the races, but to race the men in Chicago, a woman going up against men. What happened that day in the sky would be a turning point for all of these women and would alter history for them, both in the sky and on the ground, pitting the men and the women, the pilots, against each other in a bitter feud that would last for years.
And we won't spoil the details of that story if you haven't heard it or if you haven't really learned about it yet. Pick up Fly Girls. It's going to be great. You're going to be inspired. Now, Keith, this is Chasing Earhart after all. Amelia Earhart. We've been talking about Amelia for 50-plus episodes now. We have a 14-part series coming out on a documentary with her. Simply put, From your perspective, tell us why you include Amelia alongside these incredible women.
Well, let's just state the obvious up front. You can't write any narrative about women in aviation in the 1920s and 30s without Amelia being essentially one of the main characters, one of the main players, because that's what she was. Your listeners will know a great many details of her story. That, you know, they likely know that Amelia, you know, got a lucky break in the beginning to earn her fame, you know, being chosen essentially by George Putnam to fly on the Friendship on the first transatlantic crossing in 1928. You know, but to Amelia's long enduring credit, in my opinion, she did not, you know, rest on those laurels. She could have used that flight to do pretty much anything she wanted. If she wanted to go to Hollywood and become an actress, she could have done that. You know, if she wanted to, you know, become a vaudeville stage showgirl, she could have done that. You know, if she wanted to become an author and just be an author for the rest of her life, she could have done that. She could have done anything, or she could have done nothing and lived off the fame that she won as essentially a passenger aboard that 1928 transatlantic flight. She would not do that. Based on my research and certainly the work that others have done, you know, in the rest of what would be Amelia Earhart's very short life, you know, 9 more years, that's it. she would, in my opinion, you know, make some bold decisions and at times maybe even some reckless decisions, almost as an answer to some of the criticism she faced and certainly the criticism that other women faced. She was intent on proving that women belonged in the sky. And that was a big point to make in the 1920s and 30s because, you know, we take flying for granted now. You know, at best, it's a place to get from point A to point B. At worst, it's a hassle when we complain about it. But in the early 1930s and late 1920s, flying was the ultimate symbol of freedom. You know, if you could fly, take to the sky, I mean, you could do anything. And so, you know, when she made those bold flights and when these other women made these bold flights, it was not just a flight. It was the symbol of freedom and the kind of equality that women were still seeking on the ground.
Keith, what was it as I'm listening to you talk, I can feel your passion, which is really just a magnetic thing. But what was it about this project in particular that drove you throughout the process? Can you tell everyone listening how this project came across your desk and what made you say yes to Fly Girls?
Sure. Well, I wish I lived in a world where book ideas like this just sort of came across my desk. I wish it were that easy. You know, it takes a lot of digging and sometimes a lot of luck. And in this case, it was a little bit of both. In the spring of 2016, back before Trump was elected, before the world sort of changed how it was spinning, I was on an airplane, of all places. I was flying from Boston to Pittsburgh for a story I was doing at the time for Politico magazine. And for this flight, I picked up a book that had been sitting on my bedside table for some time. It was a book I wanted to read. It was Lily Koppel's The Astronaut Wives Club. One of my favorite books of all time is Tom Wolfe's The Right Stuff, his very famous classic book about the original seven astronauts. Lily Koppel was telling this story from the opposite perspective, from the perspective of the seven wives of the first astronauts. You know, and I wanted to see how she did it, and read this story from a different perspective. And I'm very early in the book, and there's a paragraph about daring women and the risks they had taken over the years. And in that paragraph, there's this line, one line about an all-female air race in 1929 featuring Amelia Earhart. I consider myself fairly well-read and fairly well-educated. I had not heard of it. In my day-to-day life, if I had found this, I might have scribbled it down in a notebook and where I keep story ideas or on a piece of paper that's in my back pocket. And maybe I would have come back to it. Maybe I wouldn't have. In this case, I'm on a plane and I'm stuck in coach in the middle seat, you know, deep in the back of the airplane. And this plane had Wi-Fi. And so I was able to crack open my laptop and just start noodling around. And that's all it was. I'm noodling around on an idea. And by the time I reached Pittsburgh, I knew that there was something here because I had never heard of this world. And as I began reading about that women's air race in 1929, I realized I only knew the names of maybe two of the participants, two out of the 20. Who were these other women and what had happened to them? And so, you know, in the weeks to come, I would just start going to the library in my spare time, you know, in the night, in the evening after my kids go to sleep, I'd go to the library and hole up in newspaper archives and start reading. And it was there, you know, digging down, peeling back the layers of this onion that I realized there was an amazing story here, you know, a story, you know, featuring compelling characters who'd been forgotten, you know, people who were, you know, objectively, were amazing people, so brave, so intelligent, and were willing to risk everything to do the thing they loved and would fly through so much in order to triumph in the end. I mean, that's an incredible story. And, I felt compelled to tell that story.
And thank you for talking a little bit about the research that you did, because we have a lot of young folks who follow the project who want to write. So hearing from someone of your stature discuss kind of the research and how you drilled down and how you did things is really, I think, going to be helpful to them. Now, we all have an end game, of course, when we take on projects like this. I'm wondering if you can tell everyone what you hope readers will take away from this book when it drops August 7th.
Well, I mean, the first thing I hope and my ultimate goal really is is that these women be remembered, you know, get the recognition they deserve. Amelia Earhart is an incredible American and an amazing aviator and an icon and a role model to boys and girls today, in my opinion. But knowing what I know about Amelia, it would upset her, I believe, to know that her friends, you know, Ruth Nichols and Louise Thaden and some of her compatriots, Ruth Elder and Florence Klingensmith, people who at times gave everything to do this, to fly planes, have been forgotten. That would upset Amelia. You have this amazing podcast, and Kansas in general has done an incredible job cherishing the legacy of Amelia Earhart. You know, my hope is that some of these other women get their due now too. You know, Ruth Nichols in her home state of New York, and Louise Thaden in Arkansas and in Kansas, Ruth Elder in Alabama, and Florence Klingensmith in North Dakota and Minnesota. These women deserve to be remembered for what they did in a time when men said to women, you can't fly and you definitely can't race. All of these women collectively organized, they stuck together. Even when they had their rivalries in the sky trying to beat each other, they remained friends on the ground. And, you know, I hope ultimately that that they are once again remembered for all of that.
Beautifully stated. And regarding Amelia Earhart in Kansas, you ain't seen nothing yet. Wait till you get to Atchison. It's pretty remarkable what they do here.
I can't wait.
It's going to be exciting. Now, Keith, where can people find you online and follow your work? Do you have a website, social media? Can we plug that, please?
Absolutely. So the book has its own website, flygirlsbook.com. My website is keithob.com. And I can also be followed on Twitter at that same handle, at keithob.
The book is Fly Girls. We will have all the links to everything we talked about today in the show. Keith, I know you're slammed. Thank you for sitting in on the podcast with me today. It's been a pleasure, sir.
Oh, it's been great. Thanks so much for having me, and I can't wait to see you in person this September. Looking forward to it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Chasing Earhart podcast, part of our Legacy retrospective series. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Come back to ChasingEarhart.com each week for another new podcast. While at ChasingEarhart.com, visit our archives and our blog to hear all of our past episodes and interviews with guests such as Brad Meltzer, Tom Vinson, Candace Fleming, Jessica Cox, Abigail Harrison, and Shasta Ways. You can also hear interviews with representatives of all of the relevant hypotheses regarding the disappearance of Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan, such as Tom King, Dick Spink, Gary LaPook, Rick Gillespie, Andy Sherrill, and more. Also at our site, you can find hundreds more posts, project updates, and much more information regarding the life and disappearance of Amelia Earhart. The Chasing Earhart podcast is a show without any sponsors or ads. We rely on support from listeners like you to keep the Chasing Earhart project operating. You can donate to the show, and as our thank you, receive bonus podcasts, merchandise, and advanced opportunities for Chasing Earhart events. Find a full list of available shows and rewards at patreon.com/chasingearhart. You can also follow the project on social media, where our team posts all of our shows, news, and project information. And that hashtag is @ChasingEarhart. The Chasing Earhart podcast is produced by Vanessa Williamson and edited by Tom Myers. Podcast music is provided by Dane Jarris Schmidt, and narration is done by Forrest Burgess. The opinions on Chasing Earhart are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. Chris Evan Films Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. All movie clips and audio used in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of historical education, and no infringement is intended. The Chasing Earhart podcast is an exclusive trademark of Chris Evan Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. The Chasing Earhart podcast is a Chris Evan Films production. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.